Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today, we are talking with Wendy Hinman, who is a Bainbridge Island adventurer. She's the author of Tightwads on the Loose, a 7-year Pacific Odyssey about a voyage she took aboard a 31-foot boat with her husband from 2000 to 2007. They sailed over 34,000 miles aboard a small wooden sailboat, cooped up sometimes for weeks on end in a tiny space, she says, that might be rocking violently. She alternated between playing Susie Homemaker and Wonder Woman. She shared her sailing adventures through emails and her blog, Velella's Adventures in Waterland. She is a regular contributor to the magazines 48 North and Latitude 38. She's been featured in Sail, Cruising World, Sailing, CYC Leadline, Heebie Jeebies from Hong Kong, and Kazi Magazine from Japan. Tightwads on the Loose has garnered over 85-star reviews on Amazon. Her book has been selected a best travel book for women and a staff favorite at a number of bookstores. She has made presentations to Corinthian Yacht Club, Hawaii Yacht Club, Seattle Yacht Club, Southwestern Yacht Club, Shilshow Bay Yacht Club, and Cruising Club of America, among many others, as well as regularly featured at the Seattle Boat Show and the Wooden Boat Festival in Port Townsend. Welcome, Wendy.
Hi, thank you for asking me to come.
I'm really excited to hear about your adventures, not only in sailing and writing, but in presenting from your work. So why don't we start with where you are today? What are you about to do in San Francisco?
In San Francisco, there is the Strictly Sail Boat Show every April, and I usually do a number of different presentations about how to prepare to go offshore and do voyaging. Since we went offshore for 7 years, we learned quite a few things along the way. How to deal with 24/7 with your relationship aboard a tiny little boat. How to deal without a lot of equipment that might break, living without refrigeration, provisioning tips in all sorts of ports around the world, and dealing with watches and boat handling and all sorts of different things that you deal with when you're out there on the ocean alone.
So is that what you're going to be talking about in several presentations this weekend? Or
yes, I'm doing three presentations. At first, they asked me to do five, and I was not able to do the last day of presentation, so I'm just going to do three.
Oh,
and then I'm also doing a presentation for a yacht club while I'm here as well.
So you have learned how to schedule yourself well.
Yes. I've figured out that if I make a point of trying to leverage my travel wherever I am and see if there's somebody that's interested in my book, I often get a lot of good responses.
So you are a very good marketer and administrator as well as writer and traveler. So you have a story called We Came to Say. I'm wondering what that one is about. It was published in an anthology. Can you tell us more about that story and where it was published?
That story was about a passage that we took on the ocean, and I'm actually going to read a little section from that, which I also used in my book, Tightwads on the Loose. And it's about kind of looking at my mortality as a ship nearly mowed us down.
Oh.
And it was part of an anthology that I did with fellow writers. It was a great experience for me to understand the whole book world a little bit before actually coming out with a full manuscript book myself.
Well, I'm eager to hear you read. And just before you do read from that story, could you talk a little bit about how the anthology project came about and what you did learn?
I was in a class with a number of people at University of Washington in their memoir program, and our instructor thought this would be a good idea and put the word out and to see who was interested, and a number of us were interested, and she walked us through the process, and we did submissions and had a big launch party at Third Place Books in Seattle, and it was quite a great learning experience for all of us, I think, to be part of a publishing project before doing a full-length manuscript.
What kind of call for submissions was it? What were you looking for?
Personal stories of challenge and things that we felt we needed to share with the world.
So that wasn't just related to challenges on the sea?
Oh, not at all. People wrote about all sorts of things that they've encountered in their lives. It's actually quite a nice book. A friend of mine suggested that it was a great book for people and waiting rooms and hospitals to just see all the different issues that people grapple with in their lives.
Mm-hmm. What was the biggest challenge, do you think, in putting out the anthology and therefore the biggest learning for your own approach?
I think for me it was getting everyone else excited about some of the marketing. I guess I have a marketing brain and I see opportunities and connections, and I did some of my work life was marketing before I got into writing, and so I just see those connections and wanted to pursue that more than some of the other writers did, and maybe I took it a little further than some of them felt comfortable with doing, with approaching bookstores and doing readings and things like that.
So you had a natural talent, so to speak, for doing that, and that certainly has helped you organize the kinds of events you're doing.
Yes. To me, it's honoring the work. I do all this work to create a story, and hopefully it's a great story that people really want to read. But if they don't know about it, then they can't really enjoy the story that you've worked so hard to write. And so I see it as just part of the rest of the package of being a writer to share it with the world and make sure people know about it. And usually the response is quite good when I start talking about my book and the story. Usually there's a lot of good interest. And so I think that enthusiasm is contagious.
Absolutely. And also, you have some tales to tell that most of us, although we'll relate to facing challenges, it will take us vicariously on a journey we might never even think to take ourselves. So that said, maybe this is a good time for you to read from that story.
In the vast North Pacific, thousands of miles from land, there's not a heck of a lot to look at, even less if it's foggy. We've been sailing nonstop for nearly 3 weeks, a week longer than our longest passage to date from Mexico to the Marquesas. Neither of us had seen a ship in more than 2 weeks. Once fog settled upon us, even dolphins, whales, and birds were no longer visible. Forget passing the time by marking the movement of the sun, moon, and stars across the sky. Even the thin line separating water from sky was fuzzy. At 4:40 in the morning, I'd been awake for maybe 45 minutes. I yawned, rubbed my eyes, and shivered. Fortunately, summer dawns come early at this latitude. Moisture hung thick in the air, collecting and glistening on my cheeks as our momentum propelled me through it. Lines creaked as they moved in their blocks in time with the gentle shifting of the boat. Water cast aside by the cut of our bow gurgled alongside the hull. Finally, wind had returned to aid our progress. Garth and I had alternated keeping watch in four-hour stretches. We'd had contact with no other human beings for weeks now. Even our contact with one another was compromised by a need to get enough sleep while keeping a constant vigil. With nothing on the horizon to focus on, my thoughts drifted to what awaited us at the end of this journey. We'd been gone for a long time, 7 years sailing in the Pacific and Asia, at our own pace, by our own choice. It had been a priceless experience full of incredible encounters with people and wildlife. We'd overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles and thrived. We changed in that time. So had the country and friends we'd left behind. We'd missed 9/11, one of the most monumental events in our nation's history, and had missed nearly the entire two Bush administrations. I wondered how it would feel to be back and how I would adjust to the frantic pace of American life after the tranquil life of sailing. A flash of color in my peripheral vision instantly jarred me out of my reverie. A bright orange ship emerged out of the murk on a collision course, closing the distance between us unnervingly fast. Normally, when I spotted a ship, I could take evasive maneuvers with a minor course correction to put us on a widely divergent path, at least if I'm paying attention. But this one was too close. I could see him, but could he see me? A white boat with white sails against a white sky? I doubted it. I had minutes to get his attention before impact. The fog thickened and he disappeared from view. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I was scared to take my eyes away from where I had last seen him. Our radio wasn't within reach. Neither was our horn. Our pitiful horn sounded more like a party favor anyway. There's no way anyone could hear it. Usually I had all these plus a floodlight at my fingertips, but this wasn't a typical shipping route. And after weeks of seeing nothing, it seemed ridiculous to expose them to perpetually salty air and to waste all that battery power running the radio to talk to who exactly. The ship reemerged. God, was he close. At least I knew where he was, but I still had a big problem getting bigger by the second. I felt like a bug on the freeway faced with a rapidly advancing windshield. Within minutes, the ship would turn our home of 8 years into debris, plunging us into the cold North Pacific, My heart pounded in my chest and my body started shaking uncontrollably. I frantically banged on the hall with my knuckles. "Turn on the radio, quick!" Garth popped his head up and squinted at me with bleary, unfocused eyes. "Huh? What's going on?" Wordlessly, I pointed to the dramatic color interrupting our featureless horizon. His eyes popped open and he gasped, instantly wide awake. Before I could get any words out, he reached for the radio. "Orange ship, this is the sailing vessel Valela. We are directly off your bow on a collision course. Do you see us?" Garth said, carefully enunciating each syllable. Garth's eyes locked on mine, then settled on the ship. We strained to detect a reply, cocking our ears towards the speaker, as though that would help. Tick, tick, tick. I heard our clock softly marking time. After what seemed like an eternity, a whistle and two clicks crackled through the speaker. The ship's bow abruptly swung away. I exhaled. Fog billowed around us, masking the surprisingly brilliant color, enveloping it briefly. When the orange reappeared, I watched it slip behind us, back into the murk, like a phantom. Only my irregular heartbeat hinted of our recent danger. My heart took me some time to resume a slower beat. The horizon resumed its uniformity. Garth returned to the world of slumber as best he could. I continued my watch, trying to shake the memory of our nearly fatal encounter, which now felt like a hallucination. 4 hours on, 4 hours off. Only 2,959 miles to go.
Wow. My heart is racing.
It's always a tough debate where to read from.
Yeah, well, I think that was an exciting portion of your book, and it makes me realize that it's time to talk about your next book, which you're at work on, which you may be calling a title with two words, Sea Trials, in it, and that was certainly a sea trial. There were others, I take it.
My first book, Tightwads on the Loose, is about a journey that my husband and I took together on a little 31-foot boat, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, kind of poking fun, mostly, at us and our ridiculous situation by being on such a little boat. Obviously, we had some pretty exciting, hair-raising encounters like the one I just read. My husband had sailed around the world as a kid, and he was shipwrecked at the age of 14. And he got to live like Robinson Crusoe on a remote island in Fiji in the South Pacific until they were rescued for about a week. And they had a hole so big, the hole the size of a Volkswagen, in their vessel. They thought that was it. They were done, and their voyage was over. But they were able to pull the boat off the reef and rebuild it in the blistering heat of the tropics and finish the voyage around the world. And it was definitely what you would call sea trials. And it's a really exciting story. I feel just so blessed to have all the letters that they mailed home and the newspaper articles that were written about them, and to be able to interview each of them and talk to them about this story that I've been hearing for as long as I've known my husband, which is going on 30 years. So anyway, it's been quite fun to write this story, and I'm doing some final edits at this point, and it should be out before too long.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. In case you've just joined us, you're listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Sheila is talking with Bainbridge Island writer Wendy Hinman about writing her memoir, marketing the book to a wide audience, and her current project, Written in the Voices of Others.
Readers who might be interested in your first book, Tightwads on the Loose, can find that information about ordering that book on your website and other actual book websites?
Yes.
Okay, so we would go to wendyhinman.com, WendyHinman.com, to find more out about Wendy and her first book. And we have time to read that one before we can pick up your sea trials and learn your husband's story. So from a writing point of view, it's very interesting to hear that you're making a transition from writing your own story that involves your husband, but it is your story, to writing a story of others who you've been able to interview. And how has that gone for you? How does that feel to be switching gears in that way?
It's been really fun to do that. I've had to mess with voice just a little bit because it's not my story. And what I've discovered is that my readers really loved my voice in Tightwads on the Loose. And so having to shift to talking about other people is potentially making a few people nervous that I've talked to that said they can't wait for the new book to come out, but they're sad that it isn't about me, which I think is kind of funny. But I think I've hit a nice balance in that voice is not terribly different, even though it is not about me. And so I think that those readers who love Tightwads on the Loose will also love this one.
Wendy, that voice that you're talking about, are you in the book too, saying anything in the first person?
No.
That, oh, wow.
No, I'm not in the second book at all. That writer's voice, I think, still will come through.
What point of view is it in?
It's an omniscient narrator.
Uh-huh. So that narrator has a voice that you think people will also enjoy?
Yes, I do.
Good. And I'm sure you're right. So that's quite a story, to live like Robinson Crusoe, if only for a week, not knowing you would be rescued.
And then finishing the journey, which is quite a task,
uh-huh,
given all the things that they went through. So it's an exciting adventure, but there's a lot of good humor as well in that one,
uh-huh,
in addition to the first one that I wrote.
Excellent.
I've got a couple new ideas for things I want to work on, and those are going to be more historical fiction, and so voice is going to have to change even more for those, I think. But I'm getting kind of excited about these other ideas that I'm working on as well. So the thing is trying to balance marketing something that I've already done with what's in my brain totally absorbing me that I'm working on now, and then the ideas that percolate as I'm just going through life.
Right.
Things that I want to work on in the future. Juggling that as a writer is always a challenge.
Absolutely. So I want to ask, though, about this historical fiction. Are they on the sea as well?
No, these two would have nothing to do with the sea.
So that's...
I don't want to just write sea stories. Although I've discovered that there is a really ready audience among sailors for sea stories. They're very avid readers, and that has helped me tremendously in the marketing, and then also being able to do how-to seminars as well as just sharing the story has made it really easy for marketing. But I think they'll read other stories, and maybe the historical fiction things will get me kind of engaged to new audiences. I at first thought that these sea stories would just appeal to sailors, but because it was picked as a top travel book for women, that kind of shows that it's gone beyond the sailing audience. And then Western Washington University picked it for their local authors literature program, which I thought was pretty neat. And those people weren't sailors either. So I guess it does go across to other genres.
Not a sailor, but I was right with you on your little boat looking at that big ship coming towards you. I think that material does appeal. I'm glad to know that sailors read a lot. I imagine they have a lot of time when they're anchored to read, which is nice. So tell me how you came to writing. Were you a writer before you took this journey?
I have always been a very avid reader. That's first and foremost. My whole life, that's one of my favorite things to do. And as a kid, I would win the prizes as the one who read the most over the summer. But also, before we left, I worked at an online magazine. And I worked doing some technical writing and as a web content manager during the dot-com boom. So I've done a lot of non-book-related writing before we'd left. And then when we were on our voyage, one of my favorite things to do was to write up the stories of where we'd been and what we'd seen and encountered and share them with friends and family. And then I kept hearing that people were passing them on to other people. And then I had a blog that was also pretty popular, and people kept writing back and saying, you gotta turn this into a book. This is great stuff. I always secretly wanted to write a book. When I was in 8th grade, we took all of our assignments and we assembled them into a book, and that just left such a strong impression on me. And I had so much respect for writers, authors, and books that I always secretly wanted to write one, but the question of what I had to say being important enough to write a whole book about it was something that perplexed me. And then when I did this voyage and had such great response for my updates and had people telling me that I should write a book, it became more obvious what to start with.
What were your challenges in turning a blog and emails into a book?
Well, blogs and emails just have a completely different type of writing. It's a lot of summary in a blog and in magazine articles. But with a book, you really need to bring it alive with scenes, with letting the reader feel like they're in the moment with you, experiencing that situation with you. And so I couldn't just take what I had already written and pour it into a book. I had to reinvent all these things. And I wrote many things that I hadn't written about on my blog or in my updates because they just didn't translate well to scenes or to that style of writing.
So it seems to me that you also took some classes. You mentioned being in a memoir class. So did you find yourself enjoying learning some of the craft of book writing?
Oh, very much. I love to take classes. So I took a lot of classes, and I started meeting with a writing group every week. One of my friends had published a book while we were away, and she invited me to join her writing group. And they meet every week, and I still meet with them. It's been probably 8 years now that I've been meeting with them. And the rule is we've got to bring something to share, like 6 to 10 pages every week, or something about writing that enriches the group. And having that weekly deadline really got me going. I would write a scene a week, some little vignette from the voyage, and then I would edit what I had brought the week before. And so I was doing at least that. And what really changed for me was when I started writing first thing in the morning every single day, I started making much more progress on what I was doing. And then I created a kind of a spreadsheet. I know spreadsheets and writers don't appear to get along, but I actually found it a really useful tool. I would have a sheet for each character, a sheet for important events. I would be able to track the timelines of what happened in the story so that I could know that 20 days later this happened or 4 hours later such and such happened. And it just helped me keep track of things in the story. And then I kept a track of all the scenes that I wanted to write and what stage they were at. So I used different color combinations to let me see that something had been started but not finished, or something that had been revised and reviewed one time or more than one time, or something that had felt fairly ready.
I very much appreciate hearing about your tools for organization, because when you're writing book-length material and narrating it through time, there are obstacles to keeping track of how to not only make the story the best it can be, but the most truthful it can be. It's a lot of work. So I've never tried spreadsheets. I sort of don't have an affinity for them. But listening to you makes me think, well, maybe I ought to learn a little bit more about them, because it sounds very effective to handle all the material, as is having a writer's group and deadlines, like you said. So I want to make sure that we also add in some information here about other things you do for writers. Now that you're deeply involved in the life of writing, you edit a newsletter, an impressive newsletter called The Writer's Connection. I don't know how you got started on that, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about that work.
One of the things that I discovered as a writer and as a author that needs to sell books is that it's really kind of a grassroots effort. And being a citizen of the writing world is one of the key marketing approaches and the key ways of buoying my spirits as a writer when I'm spending long periods of time by myself to keep going. And so I have created a writing community, and it really helps me as a writer to keep writing, but it also helps me to reach out to other writers and help them and learn. I get to learn from them. So a friend of mine from one of my writing classes and I have been working on the Writer's Connection, and we interview many writers that are in the Pacific Northwest region, and many are extremely successful New York Times best-selling authors that are household names, and we get to learn from their process by asking them questions about how they work. I also try to make a point of going to book readings and book events with other authors and supporting my fellow authors, and then getting to know them as human beings, because they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like I do, and they have had to learn so much to get where they are and to find the success that they have found. And I'm eager to learn from their experiences and to help them if I can. And so bringing their work to our readers gives them something. We, as readers, get to learn from their experience.
Wendy, how do we get to sign up to receive this newsletter, The Writer's Connection?
Our website address is writersconnection.org. And on that, you can click on the link to send an email to be a subscriber.
And how often does it come out?
It is bi-monthly, and we interview all sorts of writers from various different genres, essayists, novelists, memoirists, children's authors, science fiction, thriller, all sorts of different types of work, so that we address the needs of a wide variety of writers that are our readers.
I enjoyed my interview with you, and I enjoy sharing that link with lots of people, and I enjoy the Writer's Connection, too. I hope that many of our listeners will go to writersconnection.org and sign up. It's very, very valuable resource and interesting reading. So I want to thank you personally for continuing that effort, because when you're busy with your own work as a writer and writing groups and having time to write and marketing your work and doing presentations, it's not always easy to grab the time to also have another passion inside the writing life. I very much appreciate that work. So I want to end today, Wendy, by reminding people that they can hear you present at this fall's Wood and Boat Festival. You probably know the dates.
I think it's September 9th through 12th, if I remember correctly.
All right.
It's usually the first weekend in September.
And how many presentations will you be doing there?
Probably three or so.
Okay. So we'll be...
And then I'll be selling books at the Author's Corner as well.
Wonderful. So people can meet you in person then and get to hear more of your work and see the book as well. Or they can go ahead of time to your website, wendyhinman.com. And Hinman is H-I-N-M-A-N. Well, I hope you have a wonderful time presenting in San Francisco, and I really appreciate your spending time with us today on our program In Conversation, and I hope to see you very soon up here in the Northwest.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun talking with you. I've learned a great deal from you, and I love what you're doing to share the writing world with your listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, www.writingitreal.com/audio.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.